Welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. On this podcast, we attempt to let go of all the subtext and social barriers that hold us back. It isn't about being right or wrong. We're just trying to keep it real. In this episode, I interview a friend of mine, Michael Greenberg. Michael is a dermatologist and improvisational actor based in Chicago, who I came to know during the pandemic over Zoom meetings. I've actually only met him in real life once, but I still consider him a true and dear friend. This is an episode full of laughter and centers on the spiritual lessons we can learn from the rules and practice of improv. So let's get into it. Welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. I'm Michael Jeffries, and today I'm talking with one of my good friends, Michael Greenberg, a dermatologist in the Chicago area, also an improv actor and all-around great guy. Thanks for coming on the show, Michael.
Hey, thank you. It's just another Michael.
Just another Michael.
This is the show of Michaels.
This is the show of Michaels.
Yeah.
My friend was asking me, so you're doing an interview for your podcast, and what's it going to be about? And I said, well, my friend said he wants to talk about improv and spirituality. And they said, what is that?
It's the truth.
Okay.
The unvarnished truth.
I love it. So I want to get into that, but why don't we start with kind of like who you are and why you would want to talk about something like this?
Well, as a doctor for 25 or 30 years, my vision has been to bring care and compassion back to healthcare, to get healthcare back to being a profession that's about care and love and less about money, to remove the corporatization. So in order to do that, you have to interject things like communication skills and connection with other people. You know, that's that word spirituality. People think it's like, whoa, I don't want to go there in medicine. It's a science. Yeah, it's a science, but you all start connecting with people. So that's where that came from. And there's a whole story behind it.
All right, let's hear the story. I want to hear the story.
Okay. Well, how much time do we have, Michael?
As much time as we need.
Cool. All right. Well, let me go back.
If you don't want to tell the story, that's fine too. But
No. No, I do. But I have to go back a few steps so you understand where this is coming from.
Okay.
I always knew I wanted to be a really good doctor and take care of people. And I had a crisis about 25 years ago. A new doctor had moved in across the street, another dermatologist, and this guy was Mr. Marketing. Every single time I opened a newspaper, there was an ad of his, and he opened his office with photo op and the mayor and a big red ribbon and a scissors, wooden scissors about 3 feet long. And I wanted to kill him because I thought this kid would take my practice away. Mm-hmm. So I started to compete with him. And the only way I know how to compete was money. How much money was I making? Mm-hmm. So long story short, about 6 months into ramping up my practice so I would see 100 patients a day, which is about 90 seconds a patient, I was seriously planning suicide. Mm. And I turned to my wife one day, and give you timing of this. This was 2 years before Field of Dreams came out. Turned to my wife and I said, I'm quitting medicine. I can't do this. I will die if I stay here. And that afternoon, as I was starting to dial a practice broker to sell my practice, I heard a voice. Same voice that came out of that cornfield. I thought I was psychotic for a minute. But as I listened, it made more sense than anything in my life. The voice said, shut the book. You're not leaving. Of course you hate what you do. You forgot who you are. You're not a businessman. You're a doctor. And it isn't just you. And it isn't just your profession. And it's everybody on the planet. People have forgotten that we're all family. We're all brothers and sisters here to take care of one another. And then the voice said, I want you to stay here and follow two rules. Don't turn anyone down for lack of money who needs it, not just because they want it. And don't rush anyone. And that altered my life. Started an incredible spiritual journey, which I won't go into details of that. Let's get up to the improv part. So about 6 years ago, I mean, I've written, I've been on media, I've been on television, done all kinds of really fun things with this vision. And of course, nobody's listening. You know, if you go to your doctor these days, they're being bought up by corporations and you get 9 minutes with the person. But 6 years ago, my granddaughter was doing improv down at Second City in Chicago, and we went to see a student showcase. And on the way back, I turned to my wife and I said, "That looks like so much fun." And she said, "We can do that here in the suburbs of Chicago. There's a theater called Laugh Out Loud, and you can take classes." So we did. And one of my really, really good buddies, he's kind of a spiritual brother, when I told him I was doing this, he said, "Yeah, he used to do that." He said, "And basically, improv is spiritual practice. It's learning to stay in the moment." So I started taking classes and I quickly learned a couple things. Number one, improv is not about telling jokes. If you go an improv show, it's not stand-up. Everything is created in the moment. And the whole training is learning to stay in the moment. Doesn't that sound familiar? Like every spiritual practice is live in the moment, stay in the now. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you have to listen so hard to your scene partner, the people in the scene, that you pick stuff up, little stuff, and then turn it on its ear. And if you look at all the great comedies on television, or the series, for instance, that's what they do. They don't tell jokes. Basically, what they do is they take a real-life situation and heighten it. Okay. For instance, if I was in a scene with another actor, woman, and she said to me, "You never listen to me." That's a simple line, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you could make that a scene about, "Yeah, I do. No, I don't. Yeah, I do." And then the audience gets bored and walks out. Or you could say something like, "You never listen to me." You go, "Never? I listened to you 6 times and now I got 6 kids I got to put through college. You know, I'm not listening to you again." So it makes it funny. It amps it up, heightens it. Yeah. That's a simple example. So as I got through classes, I realized that's what it's about. It's about listening skills. And after a couple of years of going to classes and working with different teachers around the country, I had this light bulb moment. And I thought like, this is what doctors should be doing. We should be taking these classes to learn to listen more carefully to our patients. And a couple of my partners in our group started to take classes. And the heart of improv is something we call yes-anding. We agree with whatever's on stage.
I've heard this before. You always go along with the scene partner.
Exactly. So if your scene is in Hawaii and your partner forgets and says, "Look at those polar bears," you don't say, "Dumbass, we're in Hawaii." You know, you go, "Yeah, don't they look hot? Maybe if we got them waxed, we could date them," you know, or something like that. Really, when you agree with it, it makes it ridiculous. But more importantly, when you agree, for instance, in a partner's meeting, when there's 6 of you who have taken improv training and you're trying to deal with something difficult and someone throws a really stupid sounding idea on the table, instead of saying like, "That's dumb," you say, "Yes, and if we change this," "Yes, and if we change it," and all of a sudden something that sounded absolutely like this is never going to work turns into the post-it note or the next thing because you yes-anded it. Uh-huh. You never disagree. You never say no to your partner on stage. You may say no, but only when no is a yes. And that's kind of crazy, but there are times when saying no is agreeing with them.
Right.
So I started to do more and more work, formed a troupe when we perform in Chicago, but there was something missing until I realized, I got to get this to doctors. So I started working with the head of my theater to do a workshop for medical students at one of the medical schools here in town. And that was okay. But my big triumph came when I teach overseas at a medical school in Paris. It's a really tough job. Someone's got to do it, you know? And I just suggested one day that they do an improv training program, and they bought it. So I got an improviser together. It was right out of a Woody Allen film, sitting in a cafe, you know, drinking coffee. And here's this improviser and the person with the medical school. And I said, "I think you should do this." And they both said yes. And the program got created. And so medical students are now in Paris learning how to listen better. Hmm. And Michael, don't you think the world would be better if we all really listened to one another?
That is what a lot of wise people say.
Yeah. My father-in-law was one of the wisest men I ever knew, and he only had a high school degree. Huh. He used to say all the time that he thought that 100% of problems in life were errors in communication. Uh-huh. Either something wasn't said clearly or wasn't understood clearly. And I think he's right. I think he's absolutely right. So you know, my part of the vision that I have has changed, and now it's not just bringing care and compassion, but bringing communication skills. Right before the pandemic, I was working with the Illinois State Medical Society Insurance Company to try and create a day-long workshop for doctors on just teaching them some improv skills to better communicate. Now, let's diverge for a second. The history of improv. Improv didn't start off as classes for those people who want to get to Saturday Night Live and become famous. Uh-huh. Improv started off with a social worker named Viola Sporlin, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Chicago. And she was working with immigrant families. And she created these games of communication so that people could communicate better and develop their community better.
Really? And
yes, it was created by a social worker. Her son was, I believe this story is correct, Paul Sills. He may have changed his name from Sporlin to Sills. And Paul Sills founded Second City.
So improv started in Chicago by a social worker and then turned into Second City. Like Chicago is the birthplace of improv.
Absolutely. And still the heart of a lot of improv. Even through the pandemic, we've had some changes in theaters, but Chicago's always been a mecca for improv.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So you see, it started off being something to help people, and it's really fun performing on stage. Getting a little less fun as I get older because I can tell how well I did in a show by the number of leaves I have to take the next day. I did a show last Friday and it was a 4-leave day. So I know I did really well. Because what's interesting, what the audience doesn't understand in an improv show, for instance, when we're on stage and as you work with a troupe, and we've been together for a number of years, we know each other really well. Mm-hmm. We read each other's minds almost. We become a group mind, which is kind of nice. And when we're on stage and the show starts, the audience thinks we're doing this for them. We don't see you at all. We just hear laughs once in a while. We're just six friends up there fooling around, having the best time being silly and stupid. And we stay in the moment. And that's what it's all about. Living in the moment, connecting with other people, having fun. Wouldn't that be nice if those were the three rules of life?
Say them again.
Staying in the moment, having fun, communicating with friends. I just said them a different way.
Yeah.
What if that was life? What if that's the secret of what life's all about?
I like that. I do. So if it were up to you, you'd spend a lot more time doing improv or teaching improv, or how does this fit into your life?
Oh, yes. Yes, and everything.
Okay.
It fits into my life because I'm still rehearsing with my troupe. For shows that are coming up, and I still take classes because here's the other thing about improv that you're taught. You know how in this world we look for perfectionism? There's no perfectionism in improv. You are never done. There's never a point when you can't get better. Now, when I say get better, it doesn't mean you can't make things up better, but there's certain things you have to get over in improv. You have to get over your inner judger. You have to be able to be free on the stage and let things bubble up and come out of your mouth and go, where did that come from? And it's something brilliant, you know? When you're inside your head judging everything you say, it sucks.
Yep.
The scenes suck. The show suck. That's the first thing. And that's, isn't that in life? If you're so careful what you're saying, your communication's not going to be really clear.
That's right? Like the second, business world is like all these cagey, guarded comments.
Yeah.
Very difficult to operate in for me.
Yeah. Coming to an improv rehearsal, it's like there's no limits. We are the most un-PG people. Not on stage. we're respectful on stage. Absolutely. We don't want to offend anybody. That's not appropriate. But in our rehearsals, we just laugh our asses off all the time. And there's just no limits on the stupid things we can say to one another. So that's the first thing. Okay. So staying in the moment. And the second thing is, well, as I was talking about perfection, in life, we always want to think there's some place to get to, and then we're done. We're perfect. Look, I'm the best. There's no best, all right? It's just a pathway, like life is. And you keep improving, because after each show, our coach gives us notes, like, hey, look, you could have said this this way. You should have, you know, it would think about if you had done it this way. Oh, yeah, that would have been much better. The audience wouldn't have been confused as to what we were doing. So that's another thing. You get help from the outside. Isn't that cool? Human beings don't often do that. Hmm. Really honest, brutal help to make yourself better and better. Okay, so there's that part. I am improvising in my office all day long with my patients. And I use it as a tool. So for instance, when patients say things to me like, I have three moles I'm going to take off on a patient. They go, are you going to do them all at the same time? I go, no, I'm doing them all at the same visit. And then the patient hears, oh, this guy's really listening. I try and take every opportunity I can to let patients know that I listen to every single word they say, like their life depends on it, because it might. Uh-huh. It absolutely might. So I use that every day. And then I use it in the outside world to just have fun. You know, since I started doing improv, I mean, wherever I go, I just get silly with people. Like, take me into a chocolate store and I will do things like ask the person if I, you know, what it takes to get a job as a candy tester, or how much will they charge me to crawl inside the cabinet and eat as many pieces of chocolate as I want. When I'm in Paris, I speak French fluently. So I have a great French accent, and I stop Americans on the street and I ask them if they're Americans and if they want me to take the picture. And we have this whole conversation. I think I'm French, and it's totally improv in the moment, you know? And the idea is to have fun. I have a riot doing it.
Do you ever tell them you're an American from Chicago? Do you ever facade never. Come down?
No, I'm an actor. I'm an actor. You don't break character.
Fair enough.
Keep that character. I'll play that character all day long. I was in a restaurant last time. I was there with a friend of mine, there was a bunch of people, 10 Americans at the next table, doing what we in Americans, one of the things we do overseas is, besides dressing badly and being fatter than everybody around us, is we talk very loudly in restaurants and we're always talking about money.
Mm. Okay.
So I said, where are you from? They said, Chicago. I went, oh. I said, oh, Chicago. They said, wait, you just said it like an American. I said, I know, I'm an actor. I can do an American accent perfectly. I went to school in your country. And then they started to say, oh, you know, we're Americans. You could tell. He said, yeah, you speak so loud and all you talk about is money. I said, please, when you come to France, you know, in our restaurants, be quiet. Talk about philosophy, art, fashion, spirituality, but don't talk about money. We don't care about your money. And so they, oh, we're so sorry. And then I sat back at the table and my friend Andre said to me, Michael, you practice in Chicago? I said, yeah. He said, what are you going to do? And one of these people come in your office and say, wait, I saw you in France. I go, wow, I must have a twin, you know? So yes, I play that role all day long. It's so much fun, Michael. What's the point in life if you can't have fun?
There's a lot of truth to that. I don't know. I think that, you know, if we're going to talk about philosophy, you could then ask the question, what is the point of life? I mean, is it just
life has no point?
Okay.
But if it has no point, why not have fun while you're here?
Why not have fun?
Exactly. You know, I would suggest improv classes to people who never want to perform, but just want to get really comfortable within their own skins, talking to other people. Because that's what you get. There's a lot of people in our classes that get sent there from Toastmasters and people who want to just become comfortable speaking into groups. Mm-hmm. Or for me, it's like I have lost my fear of riffing with anybody. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't care.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions then. First of all, what I'm dying to know is, how do you rehearse improv? What happens in the rehearsal?
That's a great question. Every improv show is different. It's unique. It's made up in the moment. Mm-hmm. But what isn't made up, for instance, is the little talks we give when we open a show. Like, hey, welcome to Laugh Out Loud Theater here in the streets of Woodfield, blah, 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 blah. You know, how many of you have seen improv before? Explaining what improv is. And then the next actor talks about suggestions. And the next actor says, and there's a bar back here. And so those things... We rehearse those to be polished. Uh-huh. You don't want to get up there and be stumbling, look like a bunch of like, are these people know what they're doing? Uh-huh. So yeah, you do that. We also practice playing the improv games. We know very well that the game, when it's in the show, is going to be 100% different. But as you practice the games themselves, you get more skillful at playing them.
Right. Well, and you know what part of the game is coming next kind of thing. There's some muscle memory or brain memory.
Well, it also gets you out of your head. Some of the games are really difficult. Like one of the games we play is called Three Things. We send somebody out of the room, and then we ask the audience for three things that person did. One thing on a daily basis, one thing you do once a year, and one thing is on your bucket list. And then we screw around with those things. So if we say, okay, he brushed his teeth, that's the thing he did today. But the toothpaste wasn't really toothpaste. The toothpaste was this farm animal. You know, and he didn't do it in his bathroom. He did it in this place in the world where you would go visit. And then when that actor comes in, we have to get him to guess those crazy things only using gibberish and mime. Can't give him clues in English. And it gets really, really, really funny. Well, when you start doing that, there's sheer terror. When you're out of the room, it's like, I'm going to never guess this. You know, what if they give me Lizzo as a suggestion? I don't know who Lizzo is. And what if they get, what if I have to guess, you know, I don't know, Stonehenge or something. How are they going to do it? You get over all that and you just come out as a blank slate having fun and figure it doesn't matter. My team will get me to guess those things. I trust them. And so you practice that so you get over your fear. And so you know that you know the structure of the game backwards and forwards. So that's it's not a made up show. Sometimes it goes so well people think, you guys, you rehearsed it. No, we don't. It's made up every time. Everything is new because we're going on your suggestion. We don't know what you're going to say.
Okay. So
that's question one, you get 34,000 more.
Okay. So going to an improv class, is it what are the type of people that end up? Because I imagine it's a very self-selecting type of thing, like people who have seen improv that really like it and enjoy it, and then they sign up for a class. What are you learning? Who are the types of people that show up? What's that experience like?
Totally across the board. In the class I'm in now, there's a bunch of us that are pretty advanced people coming back to work. Like the class that we're in now is like making up new games, new improv games. We make up new games all the time. So there's a bunch of us that are pretty advanced. There's a bunch of people that are pretty close to being beginners and they're just having fun. They just love it, you know? They get really kind of stupid in class and it's like, what are you doing? But it doesn't matter. You know, we just play wherever they're playing in the game. Some people go there, as I said, Toastmasters, school counselors will tell kids if they're shy, go take an improv class.
Really? Cool. And so an improv class is basically playing the games, like learning the games and then playing the games.
Well, yeah. First of all, you do warm-ups, which is where you learn to connect with one another. In a warm-up, you're in a circle and you're doing things. It makes you focus on the other players. It gets you connected that way. And then, yeah, you learn to play the games. But, you know, all the games, Michael, are all meant to bring you into the moment. They're all meant to have you living in the moment in that game. Whatever the game is. So, you know, once again, that magic phrase, live in the moment, you know, sounds like Deepak Chopra, sounds like all the spiritual teachers who write these books. That's all they're talking about. Live life in the moment. And that's what improv does. And you get to meet the coolest people, honestly. You get to meet actors, you know, and people like me. I mean, I have more than improv training. I've taken actually classical acting training.
Oh, really?
And that's really, that's interesting. It's called Meisner technique. And Sandy Meisner is one of the great acting teachers in America with Stella Adler and a few other people. And our whole training in Meisner is to focus on our scene partner and read what we see there in the way of emotions. So I have had very little problem reading people wearing their masks because all I need is their eyes. And I can pick up their feelings and emotions. And that's another skill as a doctor that I love. When someone comes in to my office and they're behind their mask and I go like, you are really upset about something. How did you know? I can see in your eyes.
So it sounds like, so let's take a few more life applications. Do you feel like improv has helped you in your, I mean, obviously you're saying in professional relationship, with strangers, with patients, and then it's brought a lot of joy to your life because you do it with friends. What do you think about what has it done for you in your personal relationships with your kids, with your wife, with, you know, people that you don't friends that you don't do improv with, how does that change who you are and how you relate?
Well, my wife took improv classes with me. Okay. We started together. She got to the point where she got to the first advanced class and had to perform, and she did it really well in the student show. But then she got, I don't want to keep doing shows. I don't like doing this. So she quit. So I just kept going on. So it really does kind of help because we know how to listen to one another. Conversations, you know, that used to be like, oh, shut up, you know, go away, you know, F you, you know. Now it's like, all right, I'm going to listen to what you have to say, because if I listen carefully enough, I'll find out what you really are trying to tell me here. I'll tell me, what are you scared of or what are you upset about? And maybe I can help. So it has made a tremendous change in our relationship for the positive. For instance, the beginning of the pandemic, my wife, whose name is Jerry, and we've been married 52 years this year, next year, we said, all right, we're going to play a game during the pandemic while we're home. We're going to make a list of the 10 things that piss us off about the other person, and we're going to tell them, and then we're going to work on those things. Now, who does that, you know?
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. I mean, gets a little testy at times, like, shut the damn drawers in the kitchen. But, but mostly, it's like, yeah, I can do that. So it you know, it's changed things. It's changed my relationship with my kids because I'm actually listening to them. It's just such a simple thing, Michael. Let me give you another example too. I just this popped in my head something I should have said earlier, but like in my office, one of the classic cases of yes anding, and this is how you can change people when you yes and them and listen to them. I had a mother told me her son, she was sending her son in, and he had eczema, and he only wanted natural therapies. He would refuse anything allopathic or medical. I said, okay, great, great challenge. So he came in, I looked at his eczema, which is pretty bad, and we were talking. He said, like, I only want natural therapy. I said, yep, I agree. Let's do that. He said, so what do you use right now? He said, well, I use lavender and thyme oil on my skin. I go, that's great. I like those things. I said, so, you know, let's talk about this. I said, I've been studying the human body for over 50 years, probably. I've never seen a human body make lavender and thyme. But I do know that the human body, right now, your body's making cortisone. It's natural to you. So cortisone's more natural to you than these oils, essential oils. How about if I give you some cortisone ointment to put on your skin to maybe get this under control before we have to, you know, delve into really unnatural antibiotics because you're about to get infected. He said, oh, yeah, okay. I yes-anded him and listened carefully. If I wasn't listening, I wouldn't have said, oh, I know what to say to this guy. And it worked. So I do little stuff like that all the time. If you're listening to people, you can help them overcome errors in their thinking that might hurt them because you say, wait a minute, I heard you say this. And how about if you look at it from this point of view?
Mm-hmm. So, so this comes up a lot, right? Is the yes and the live in the moment. Are there other principles in improv, or are those kind of the two big ones?
I think those are the two big ones. I could get really silly here and make up silly stuff, but to be serious for a moment. Yeah. And well, there's other things too. You learn courtesy. You learn, for instance, when you are doing a show or you're playing a game, you learn not to hog the stage. Okay.
That's a good lesson. Yeah. It's not always about you.
It's never about you, as a matter of fact. There are no stars in improv. There are only constellations. That's what we say. So you're up there on that stage.
I like that. Ooh, yeah, that's good.
You're up there on that stage only to make your scene partners look good. So in the last show, for instance, I was working with my teammate Ryan, and we got a bromance going on, you know, and it's like we really are in sync with each other mentally. So the scene opened up, and I forget what it was. I forget what the suggestion was, but it went right into something like, okay, if I go to the bathroom, you know? And so Ryan went, you just peed on the floor. I go, I know, but I still have to go. And the scene went on from there. And it was a game called Foursquare where we did the scene, short scene, and then we went around this square and came back to the scene later. So the next part of the scene, Ryan just took off. He's so brilliant. He goes like, I can't believe you did it again. This is a really good restaurant, Bob. You know, every place you go. And I, okay, what's my job? To answer him and look good? No, I just looked at the floor in shame like a dog, bent down and started crying. And it made the scene. You know, I didn't have to do anything but support him. And he was going on and on, building this up and up, which is what we do in improv. We heighten things. So my only job was to make Ryan look good. And he looked great in the scene. And by him looking good, I look good. Mm-hmm. There are times in an improv scene where you're out there with enough people where you hardly say anything. But your job is to just be part of the scene. Mm-hmm. And make other people look good. Now, what if we lived life like that, making our friends, our colleagues, our spouses, our workmates, what if our whole job was to make them look good? Another spiritual principle. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I like that. There are no stars. There are only constellations.
Only constellations. Yep.
Yeah.
And you'll see that with the great improvisers. If you Google or you look on YouTube and you look at some of the really, really famous people who, you know, like Stephen Colbert and all those guys who started off at Second City, you'll see in some scenes, they're not saying a lot. They're letting somebody else look good, carry the scene, and then they'll speak up with one line that'll just nail it. Mm.
So how has improv affected you? I mean, obviously, right, you've said living in the moment, but how has improv affected your religion or the other ways you conceptualize God, the purpose of life, all those kind of things?
Wow. Heavy question, Michael.
What can I say?
Yeah. I'm not a religious guy. I'm not an organized religious guy.
Okay.
I've studied many of the great ones. I can speak more Catholic than Catholics. I talk to my Catholic patients. They go, "How did you learn this? I never even learned this." I go, "Just read the Bible, dude. It's there." You know, Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, it's all the same to me. But I'm a God guy.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And I don't know what God is. I don't have God being a male deity in some place far removed, separate from me, who punishes me when I do things I shouldn't. I don't know. But to me, this is all of this dream state out here is a manifestation of God. So really, improv is kind of a religion in a way.
For you.
It's just a... Yeah, you know, like Buddhism is not considered a religion. Buddhism is considered a way of life.
Right.
So is improv. Mm-hmm. Supporting people around me, open, honest communication, having fun. I think that's my way of religion. You know.
So if I'm hearing you right, you could say you are a member of the religion of improv.
Nah, it's not a religion.
I'm just being silly.
I know that. That's what religion did. Religion, all the religions I found took a simple message, love one another, and concretized it. And then, well, you got to do this to love one another. And they made up rules, silly rules, you know?
Right.
Good old Jesus came down in a time when the ancient Jews were like so full of rules. It was so full of hypocritical stuff that he said, you don't need to follow that. Just love one another. And then we got this Catholic church that made up even more ridiculous rules than the ancient Jews had. Hmm. You know? It's all about control. I think I'm all about freedom, but freedom respectfully. Well, not that's that bad English. Respectful freedom and compassion and civil behavior toward each other. Hmm. You know, we're in an American situation right now and everyone says, I'm an American, I'm free, I can do what I want. No, you can't. You can't do what you want. I can't do what I want. But I can do what's right. And that's to treat everybody with dignity, respect, and love. And a little silliness, you know? Uh-huh. Nothing wrong with that. Patch Adams taught us that.
Yep. Okay, so kind of wrapping this up. If somebody wants to look into improv classes or learn more about improv, what's like a simple Google search for them to find a local theater or a local class or that kind of thing?
Duh, improv classes. Google improv classes. There are little improv theaters and classes everywhere. And there's actually improv classes. We've been doing them online all during the pandemic.
Really?
It's not quite the same. Yeah, it's not quite the same thing. You know, there's the silver lining of the pandemic. Here I was, we really couldn't get together. The theaters were closed. We weren't performing. And so I suddenly ran into really, really amazing, famous teachers who are now doing their classes online. I go, what an opportunity. I get to actually get trained by these people. It was cool because when we finally came back to our group starting to rehearse again, my teammate said, where have you been? Your stuff got really, really improved. Your scene work improved. We call it scene work. You know, that's when you go in, like in a scene. Scene work means if the scene is about a museum, if your suggestion is museum, the scene's not about the museum.
Right.
You don't have to mention the museum. It's just a setting. It's about two people in the museum and what's happening in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I learned to do relationships much better and get into the scene right away, you know, and tell the audience who you are. Like if we're doing a scene and I walk into you, I say, hey, Bobby, you're my twin brother, but it's time that we cut the cord between us and I've taken all the family's money. You know, whatever. Wherever you go with that. And then you get to react to that, respond to that. So I've gotten better at it. So nice. Google improv classes, online, live, move to Chicago, you know, get out of Michigan, get here.
Yeah, I know. Michigan, such a terrible
There's nothing
place.
Funny in Michigan.
There's nothing there's funny.
There's no improv. There's nothing spiritual good. In Michigan. It's no, no. Michigan is all about nothing. It's the nihilist state.
It's the nihilist state. Oh man, dang, got dark.
No, it isn't. Not. I was being silly.
I know.
I love you, man. You
no,
know,
I know.
You live in Michigan.
I know.
I feel sorry that you live there.
Yeah, I do too.
The most fun you ever had was last time you came to Chicago. You know,
I did have a lot of fun the next, last time.
The
I
most. It was the most fun.
Yeah.
It was the most. The Come most on, you know that.
Yeah.
The most fun.
It was.
Yeah. We got fun. To sit around and do nothing, and that was great.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. So is there anything else, I guess, that I didn't ask or that you'd like to add to this?
Well, it always gets back to that. What is the meaning of life? Let's end on that one. Guess what? There is no meaning. There's no meaning. We assign all the meanings. We are playing. Listen, you know, Shakespeare said, we're poor players who strut and fret our hour upon the stage and then are gone. Shakespeare said, you know, there's a lot of things that we say that we don't realize the depth of what's being said. That's true. We are all actors here. We are improvising. Whether you have had an improv class or not, Michael, you are improvising your life every second. So why not improvise your life with an open heart and an open mind so that maybe, just maybe, we can make the world a better place? You know, every morning I'll end up on this. I don't pray a lot. I have two prayers. You ready for this? First morning prayer is I wake up and I take my pulse and I go, okay, I'm here. And I know any one of these heartbeats could be my last. And I know I have no control over that. No control whatsoever. And I also know, being a human being, I will have at least 100,000 opportunities to be a total jerk. I would say asshole during the day, but I don't know where your podcast goes out to. But yeah,
asshole. I speak fluent French on this
okay.
podcast.
Good.
Go ahead.
I like that. So I go, hey, God, hey, stay with me today so that I don't have to behave that way. So maybe if it is my last day, I've made the world a better place and not messed up people's lives by being a jerk. Mm-hmm. And the only other, you know, my second prayer when I don't know what to do, I turn to God and go, you fix it.
Yes, I like that.
I can't do anything here. You fix it.
So you fix it.
That's where improv has taken me. It's like I'm on a conversational level here with God. Like he's my scene part. I'm saying, oh, that's terrible. I can't say God. God is my scene partner, and we are playing a scene here. It's called my life, or called life, and the more silly and loving and happy I can make it, the better it is for people.
Yeah, better it is for you. The more happy and wonderful
exactly.
it is for you.
Exactly. When a patient asks me, when I'm about to take something off, they say, is this going to hurt? I go, I always, and invariably say, not me. No. And it makes them laugh. Yeah, it's not going to hurt me. I don't care.
I like it. Well, thanks for, I mean, I'd love to talk about more topics with you, but I really like this one. This was a fun one.
Okay, we can talk about sex with farm animals, you know.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, I've always told, I tell my wife, says, if I die, you're going to get remarried? And I go, no, I'm going to get a sheep. She goes, why a sheep? I go, well, they don't talk back to you. You get a sweater every year. And when you're done with them, you can kill them and eat them, you know? So we can talk about that.
Okay. Sweet.
Or something else. We'll find something, Michael.
We will.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thank you.
I hope all 10 of your listeners get something out of this.
I do, too. I definitely have, and that's really what it's about.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters. You know, forget everybody else. Yeah. You know, it's just about, it's about us.
A Saturday morning conversation with one of my good buddies. What could I ask for that's more than that? And
chocolate.
I had a coffee. Every single part of a good Saturday morning was right here.
You really are missing like a chocolate donut.
I have one. I just haven't eaten it yet.
Oh, or a croissant.
I had a croissant before this meeting. I have an answer for each of your things.
Liar.
I had a ham and Gouda croissant before this.
Oh my God.
I know. Well, it's a perfect Saturday morning.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. There's nothing else to say. You have achieved nirvana on this day. This is as good as it gets, Michael. Yep. It's downhill from this point on.
Or uphill. We'll see. I don't know. Yeah. Now I got to have a great afternoon.
Yep. Yep.
Don't you think the world would be better if we all really listened to one another? There's no perfectionism in improv. You have to get over your inner judger. When you are inside your head judging everything you say, the scene sucks. Isn't that like real life? What's the point in life if you can't have fun? Who knew so much wisdom could be found in improv? Not me. But honestly, I should have known I'd be challenged and inspired by a conversation with Michael Greenberg. He's that kind of guy. I really like that guy. I mean, I would even go so far as to say I love that guy. He's legit. If you are interested in improv classes, just start Googling. There's a neat group in the Kalamazoo area called Crawl Space Comedy that has classes and regular shows. They'd be perfect if you, like me, live in West Michigan. If you are interested in being a guest on the podcast, visit anchor.fm/asimplelife and leave me an audio message with your contact information. To support A Simple Life with Michael Jefferies, subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating on iTunes or Spotify, or best yet, share the podcast with a friend. Thanks for listening. We'll see you down the road.
So, normally I do an introduction of who I'm talking to. How would you like to be introduced?
His Grace the Count of Sealand, heir to the royal throne of France, and altogether awesome dude.
Oh, wait, I gotta write this down.